Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, it's August 2nd, 57 degrees, and mostly cloudy, rain clouds even, here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. And yes, we see some, really some showers still hanging around for parts of us in the Wasatch and Wasatch Front. So as we continue throughout the day, we'll see that those storms continue to increase. We'll see cooler temperatures also. We'll only see a high of 74 in Park City for today. Again, not seeing much in the way of sunshine because of the cloud cover. And going into tonight, we'll see that the storms slowly start to fizzle out towards the overnight hours. And we'll see a low of 55 with partly cloudy skies. Tomorrow, we do see the slight chance of some shower activities, but not as widespread as today. Sunny skies will be the name of the game for us, and we'll see a high of 78. Tuesday night, we'll see that we have mostly clear skies, low 56. As we go into Wednesday, we expect to see sunny skies once again. We'll see a high of 83 as we start to dry out with more high pressure sitting over us, giving us those clear and dry conditions. Wednesday night, we'll see mostly clear skies and a low of 60. Thursday, we're expecting to see sunny conditions once again. Maybe a pop-up shower here or there, not seeing much widespread, very isolated in nature. We'll see a high of 85, and for Thursday night, as we dry out and see partly cloudy skies, we'll see a low of 56. Going into Friday, we're expecting to see another day of sunshine once again. A high of 78 is expected for us, and going into Friday night, we can expect to see that we have mostly clear skies with a low of 55. Saturday, we continue the dry trend with sunshine and a high of 81, so a very nice weekend ahead. And we'll see that Saturday night remains on the clear and dry side also with a low of 56. Sunday, we do it all over again, sunshine with a high of 81. And again, wrapping up the weekend very nicely. As from the Pinpoint Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, Cesar. KPCW News Time now, 8:08. And stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the executive director of the Mountain Mediation Center, Gretchen Lee, talking about the ending of the CDC eviction moratorium for tenants that expired on Saturday. Then the executive director of Utah Open Lands, Wendy Fisher, in with an update on the Bonanza Flat easement. Are we loving it to death? Then executive director of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder, with an update on the services the organization offers, including a food bank now that the Camas Food Bank has closed, at least temporarily. Also, stay tuned coming up on Mountain Money right after the local news hour. Today's guests include Future of Work thought leader Bill Jensen. He talks about his latest book, The Day Tomorrow Said No, the discovery that forever changed the future and how we work. Then CNBC airline reporter Leslie Josephs helps us understand the current jet fuel shortage and what that means for travelers. Finally, we speak with Shanna Ominski, owner and spa director of Alpen and Hyde Massage. All of that coming up on today's edition of Mountain Money.
This is Randy Barton with The Local View. It is on the air here at KPCW, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Why wouldn't you listen? We give you everything you need. Great music. Oh, our playlist, so expansive and marvelous. Proud of it. Fabulous local news and information. You can delight others with your knowledge of local items, affairs, and events. Keep you up to date on the weather, on fires, traffic, everything about pandemic living here in a mountain town. Tune in.
8:10 now, good morning. Well, for those commuters traveling to the Salt Lake Valley this week on westbound I-80, the Utah Department of Transportation announces that a section of freeway between the US 40 interchange and Kimball Junction will be reduced to two lanes starting right now, running through August 5th, Wednesday at 8 p.m. The closure is for paving and bridge maintenance. UDOT shifted the work to weekdays instead of the weekend, opening up an additional lane rather than going down to one lane to clear up the traffic problems we saw a couple of weeks ago. Minor delays are expected with the restrictions in place, but still plan ahead and allow some extra travel time. Speed limits have been reduced. UDOT will be repaving I-80 from just west of Kimball Junction to the US 40 Silver Creek Junction, along with the Silver Creek I-80 ramps at the Silver Summit Interchange. Construction schedules are weather dependent and subject to change. With all of this rain, it may mean that today. Anyway, for the latest information on traffic restrictions during construction, you can visit the U.Traffic website. Taking a look real quick here and see if we can see. No, looks pretty good right now. Right now, 8:11. It's 8:12 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the CDC eviction moratorium for tenants expired on Saturday. Officials of the Mountain Mediation Center are watching to see if Summit and Wasatch counties will see an uptick in housing evictions. On the phone with me, I have the executive director of the Mountain Mediation Center, Gretchen Lee. Good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning, Leslie.
So start by just giving us a bit of background here. I mean, it's been almost a year that tenants who have been unable to pay rent were protected by this moratorium, but again, it expired Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. So last September, the CDC put on an eviction moratorium preventing landlords from, I don't want to say kicking out tenants, but letting tenants go if they were unable to pay their rents due to, circumstances around coronavirus. And so that's been on since last September, and just Saturday it expired.
Yeah. Do we have any idea in terms of what kind of evictions were being considered here in Summit Wasatch County?
Well, so I went back and I pulled like over the last year to see sort of a year by year comparison to see what has been going on. And over the past year, both in each of Summit and Wasatch counties, there were around 19 eviction filings. Now, you can file for other reasons other than non-payment of rent. If there was some type of breaking the lease or something, you know, around the lease, holdover tenants, there's other reasons you can be let out of your lease and be part of the eviction, you know, process. And so comparing that with the previous year's numbers prior to COVID, it was right about the same. So what that tells me is over the past year, you know, this relatively low number of tenants have been part of an eviction process due to reasons other than non-payment of rent.
All right. Well, it's just Monday, but have you heard about any pending evictions? Again, it's also the first of the month.
Well, exactly. So I am on these weekly statewide housing calls, and we talk it through with people from around the state to see whatever other folks are seeing, and, you know, with attorneys, mediators, and, you know, folks from the state. And, you know, the consensus is, but again, nobody really knows, but the thought is that, you know, at this point, a lot of the larger apartment complexes have been taking advantage of the federal monies that are available. There's so much federal money available right now. And the state system, Utah, has done a great job about setting the system up so it's accessible to both landlords and tenants. And landlords have been taking advantage of the federal, you know, getting the federal money. So the thought is hopefully there shouldn't be a huge uptick, but of course nobody knows. And sort of the small landlord is the unknown in this.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about a tremendous amount of federal money, what are we talking about?
I think nationwide, I've got the numbers, I want to say $50 billion. And states are having a really hard time getting it out in, you know, a quick way. Yep, right around $50 billion.
So I guess I was thinking that the money went to the tenant who then paid the rent, but the money's going directly to the landlord on behalf of the tenant?
Yeah, so the tenant can apply or the landlord can apply. And it's being, in Utah, it's being run by DWS, the Division of Workforce Services. And they actually, landlords, the attorneys actually get paid, you know, for helping landlords apply for the rent. Okay. Yeah, so it can be done either way. So landlords can access the money and then tenants can access the money. And Park City Municipal actually has somebody within their offices helping tenants access money. Yeah. And then, of course, we have the Christian Center and Jewish Family Services, which also has done a fantastic job, you know, with the private donations in the area.
Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, I mean, what we're seeing is money that is going to the tenants based for rent payments, but landlords, again, are able to evict based on other lease, you know, something that happened in the lease. I mean, I guess, is that what we're afraid of, is perhaps they will find some technicality?
Yeah, and that's what sort of what we're starting to see. And it's not even necessarily a technicality. It's, you know, some of them are just termination of leases. They, you know, a lot of these tenants are now on month-to-month leases, and the landlord has the right under state law, you know, basically to get them out of there with a minimal notice. And so I don't want to say a lot of times, but, you know, the landlord and a lot of the things that we're seeing is doing everything right under state law.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we had kind of heard of happening at the Elk Meadows apartments, was that tenants being released for some kind of technicality and then the landlord getting a new tenant, but much higher rent. Are we starting to see that just in that trying to make up for perhaps any losses they saw?
You know, and I can't really speak because we don't know what happens when places are, you know, re-rented. If the rate, you know, we don't track that. But in terms of our what we've been seeing, Elk Meadows, amongst other, you know, area apartment complexes, are we've seen a tendency of, you know, not renewing month-to-month leases and getting tenants out for, you know, reasons other than the non-payment of rent.
So the Mountain Mediation Center is interested in helping to stabilize our local housing, doing what you called your upstream work. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so we just feel, and the research now is just coming out about eviction diversion programming and the critical nature of the upstream work of this, particularly in a state like Utah, where the state laws aren't particularly advantageous towards tenants. We just feel like this upstream work is just of vital importance. And part of it, a huge part of it, is educating tenants. A lot of times in our area, the leases are written in English. The tenants don't understand, you know, what they're signing. They don't understand the American legal system. They don't understand the basics of the contract. And so we're really making concerted effort to go upstream and to educate, you know, the tenants. We've gone out with the Christian Center to about 14 different of their mobile food pantries with them. And Utah Housing Coalition has a fantastic tenant toolkit, which explains the basics of a lease. And we have them in English and Spanish, and our bilingual outreach coordinator and our Bright Futures intern have gone out and with the mobile food pantry and just really talk to tenants. And we pass these tenant toolkits out. We ask questions. We're starting to conduct like brief surveys. And then we're also starting to do podcasts around little snippets of tenant law.
Okay. So it sounds like you're getting the resources that are available out to the community. Are you seeing some response from that?
Yeah, you know what? I feel like we have a lot of work to do and we're just at the beginning stages of it. But by all means, we're definitely getting positive responses from both landlords and tenants. For instance, a landlord at a local apartment complex has just let us post flyers in their laundry room with the QR codes of the podcasts that we're doing. So when tenants are doing laundry, they can look on their phone and get a little snippet of information about, you know, being a tenant. And they're very helpful, targeted little nuggets of information. The podcasts are like 1 to 3 minutes of like how to be a good tenant, what to do, you know, before you sign a lease. What's a term lease versus a month-to-month lease? Am I being discriminated against? Just very useful, little digestible pieces of, you know, tenant law.
Okay, and is that what's on the podcast then that you've got?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yep, in English and in Spanish.
All right.
So I mean, really want to get the, you know, the word out to the community of You know, these are just super helpful for tenants. And, you know, so far landlords have been very responsive about, you know, wanting to share because they want their tenants to be educated too.
Sure. This has really been a difficult story to report. I mean, tenants afraid to talk, afraid that they're going to get evicted. Landlords don't want to be seen as, you know, well, slumlords or anything. I mean, how is it that Mountain Mediation Center is helping?
So, well, what we're doing in addition to this upstream work, we also have, we have about 4 to 5 state court rostered mediators that are able to help downstream. So if a landlord and tenant are, you know, both willing to come to the table, we have people that are specifically, you know, trained to, you know, facilitate these types of conversations. The other bigger, larger part of it I see is part of a community long-term because this issue isn't going away. You know, even post-COVID, there are a lot of issues that need to be resolved. And this research that's coming out now really shows the critical importance of having a sort of a comprehensive eviction diversion programming. And so what we're seeing is local nonprofits, the government, you know, governments starting to come together. Areas around the country are doing this of having a comprehensive sort of wraparound eviction diversion program. And I think we're sort of at the beginning stages of that in the Park City area.
Okay. And then the Mountain Mediation Center, I mean, where are you guys located? And
we have our office within the Christian Center.
Okay. And I mean, is it that people make appointments to and that you would have both parties there? Is that how it works?
Yep. So throughout COVID, we've been doing everything through Zoom. So we just run our mediations through Zoom. We've had a couple in-person mediations in the last month, but even the court system, we staff the mediations over at Silver Summit Courthouse. They're still on Zoom. So right now we're still primarily on Zoom. But yeah, you call our line 435-336-0060 or our website mountmediation.center. And you can schedule an appointment. And our outreach coordinator, she's bilingual, so English, Spanish, doesn't matter.
All right. And again, if it was just a tenant that wanted something resolved before, you know, getting evicted, they could call in and request the services, and then you would follow up with the landlord? Or
exactly. That's exactly what we do. So the tenant calls in. We try to reach out to the landlord. If the landlord is not amenable, like, we immediately, you know, forward the tenant on because time's of the essence in these cases. So People's Legal Aid is a nonprofit. It's a statewide legal organization that represents tenants. And it popped up about a year or so ago. And they've been handling a lot of these cases throughout COVID. And so if we are not able to handle the case and the tenant doesn't have legal representation, it looks like it's headed that way, we refer them to People's Legal Aid.
All right. And then just quickly how the mediation center works. I mean, you've got limited staff, I think, but what, a number of volunteers trained in mediation or legal?
Yeah, so the mediation process in the state of Utah is quite interesting. There is a state statute which governs it, and anybody technically could, you know, hang out a shingle and claim to be a mediator in the state of Utah, but we use the state court rostered mediators only, and that just means that they go through a specific training. They also do so many pro bonos a year. They observe mediations, so they have a baseline training. And our particular group has been together probably about 3+ years. And it's just a unique, a great group of mediators. We have like a retired American Express executive, retired tax commissioner, a lady from an appraisal company, a mortgage broker, like people that are interested, that have a great background, but are interested in helping the community in this way.
All right. Also wanted to mention, I noticed on the website that you've got an active match grant currently happening. That means that people who contribute will basically double their donation?
So yes, yes, and we're so excited about that. We're doing that with the in conjunction with the Gannett Foundation, and it's part of our community building work of, I'm sure you're probably familiar with our community conversations we've been doing for the past year or so, and yes, so we would love for folks to call in, get on our website, and to match that grant. Thanks for bringing that up, Leslie.
Okay, so how much, up to how much do you have a... The grants for how much?
Well, we have, right now we have, I believe, oh, you sort of caught me a little off guard. Oh. I think it's a $1,000 matching grant, but then okay. We have another one ready to go. So yeah, definitely get on our website and we would love for folks to help out with this important work that we're doing.
Okay. Hey, anything else, Gretchen, you'd like to mention?
No, I don't think so, but thanks so much for having us on. And just landlords and or tenants, you know, please call us if you're having issues. We are neutral. We do not represent tenants. We are like the neutral third party in this.
Okay. Gretchen Lee is the executive director of the Mountain Mediation Center. Thanks so much for your time.
Great. Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:27. 8:28 now. Good morning. We've got 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before noon and possibly an afternoon thunderstorm as well. 74 is the expected high, 55 the overnight low. Enjoy it because we're back to sunshine and warmer temperatures as the week goes along. 78 tomorrow, 83, 85 on Thursday. Again, with mostly sunny skies, it looks like, through the weekend. Currently, we've got 65 degrees in the Heber Valley, looking again for a chance of some showers and isolated thunderstorms. A high of 84 today, 50 is the overnight low. Again, sunny and warm, 87 tomorrow, up to 93 for Wednesday and Thursday, back into the lower 80s for Friday. Well, the Bonanza Flat Conservation Area is more than 1,500 acres of undeveloped backcountry land there at the top of Empire Pass. But a bumper sticker is showing up around town that says, "Developed recreation is not conservation. Save Bonanza Flat from Park City." In the studio to tell us more, I've got Wendy Fisher. She's the executive director of Utah Open Lands that oversees the conservation easement on behalf of the property owner, Park City Municipal. Good morning, Wendy. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Leslie.
So does the bumper sticker have a point? I mean, for what should be a pristine backcountry experience, we've got a lot of developed parking lots, restrooms, trails, signs.
Oh, my. You know, I think that, first of all, we have to start with the initial bond that was done to save Bonanza Flat. I think it's important to remember that this area was slated for development, driveways, commercial development, a golf course, all sorts of things. There were numerous trails that were already on the property, and a lot of them were really poorly planned. And after seeing piles of garbage removed from the property when it was first purchased by Park City and Utah Open Lands was working on the natural lands inventory. I mean, we're talking 5 feet high, 4 feet wide, probably four or five times during that first summer. So I think the main question is, where was all that garbage and impact being placed before there were trash receptacles? And quite frankly, people to dispose of their own human waste. That's a scary thought in an area that is really the headwaters for watershed that goes all the way to the Wasatch Front. So there's actually been some needed improvements in order to take care of what was going on to begin with. We did trail counting. We did car counting when we very first started our natural lands inventory. And the parking that has been supplied was commensurate with what was taking place in terms of the amount of traffic that was already going up there. From the time that that road was paved back in, 2014, before the property was purchased, you saw a huge increase up there. And we talked to a lot of folks who'd even called Unified Police and others because of actually a lot of activity that was taking place up there. So there's that element. The other thing is recreation conservation? Yes, under the IRS code 178, public recreation is considered one of the conservation purposes. The question that I think is potentially telling is that are those bumper stickers being put up by people who are maybe not following some of the rules? that's one of the things that I think is really concerning when we talk about loving it to death. It's really becoming a disregard and a lack of respect for, you know, trail closure signs, things that we're doing to restore the area. There was a huge erosion problem on the original Bloods Lake Trail, which is why the new Bloods Lake Trail got put in. But people are disregarding that. And when they do that, you know, that does cause additional impacts.
Yeah, and certainly I think everyone would agree that this is better than a gated community with condos and a golf course. But at the same time, now that we've made it so nice, are we just inviting people to kind of overrun it and overuse it, which seems, again, against the tenets of, you know, conservation?
Yeah, I think that there's always a balance between whether or not you can allow people to explore a natural experience without damaging the natural experience. And that's something that we're certainly working very hard to deal with in terms of the trails. Again, one of the things that's really tough is there were a lot of social trails there. What a lot of people don't know is long, long ago, one of the meadows there had been torn up by ATV use, and it was just a dirt pile. And that got cordoned off and eventually came back with some of the wonderful wildflowers that people see now. There has been some trail improvement. You know, the new Bloods Lake Trail, again, is a shining example of taking a very poor trail that was a social trail and improving it. Because of the trail that used to be there, I can't tell you how many people, it's easy to hike down with your cooler and your little raft and all of those sorts of things and just leave it there. This new Bloods Lake Trail is, yeah, it's a little bit longer, but it doesn't have the same erosion problems. And it's a really, really well-built trail. And again, we do need to have some of those areas where people can dispose of their waste. All of the trailheads were on previously disturbed areas. There's no new disturbance from those trailheads. There was a quarry-like area, which is where the Bloods Lake Trail is. Yes, it got smoothed out, but it was a place where a lot of people would go and hang out and camp and that sort of thing. The Bonanza Flat Trailhead, same thing. It was a already disturbed area. And a lot of the trails use the existing trails that were there. I think if listeners could see the map of the trails that Talisker had put in, the social trails that had been there, they would see that actually we're closing off some of those areas. And again, we would appreciate it if people wouldn't rip down the trail closed signs, because those are areas we're trying to revegetate and take care of. So it's a balance, but that area was not pristine. I wish it had been. That would be great, but it wasn't.
Apparently, there are still lots of people camping in the parking lots, many of them with vans. I've had reports of even people pitching a tent in the parking lot. Is overnight parking allowed?
No, overnight parking is not allowed. Bonanza Flat is in one of those curious but great positions of being across jurisdictional boundaries. And so that's an ongoing discussion that folks are having. I personally had the chance to go up there with Officer Wardell from Wasatch County. And I think that Park City has been working really hard with Wasatch County to look at what are some of the interlocal enforcement issues. It's going to take time. That area was an area that needed some restoration, and people were coming kind of regardless. They were either going to come and create the development or the golf course, or they were going to continue to use it and camp there and all of those sorts of things. And so that's really what we're looking at. There is continued enforcement. The trailheads were designed to accommodate what was taking place when the property was purchased. But yeah, there's no question that people are parking on the side of the roads, which creates an emergency and a safety hazard. All of those things, from keeping your dog on leash, and we can talk about why that's important in that area, to respecting the signage, to making sure that, yeah, unfortunately, if there's not a parking space left in the trailhead, there isn't a place to park, and you're going to have to find another place to hike. The reality of the situation is it isn't what Park City or Utah Open Lands did in purchasing Bonanza. During COVID, we saw statewide 300% increase in recreational use. campers not always knowing what they're supposed to be doing, that kind of increase is not necessarily going away. So I like to tell people that if you love open space and you want to help us with really conservation of these open spaces, write to your legislator, write to the Speaker of the House, Brad Wilson, and tell him that putting money into the Lee Ray McAllister Fund, which helps to protect open spaces, will help us have more of these open areas to enjoy and not condense the burgeoning recreational population. It's a good and a bad problem to have, right?
Yeah. When we talk about the overnight camping, it's apparently a resident from Bonanza Flat telling me that it's basically happening every night and nobody's patrolling. I mean, whose responsibility is it to enforce?
So again, that's a jurisdictional issue. That's one of the reasons that we met with Officer Wardell up there. There are a couple of things that happen with respect to camping, right? That's not what the area was designed for, even though that was one of the hot button topics. We had a lot of stakeholders that we involved who wanted to continue to see camping, but especially in this mega drought and with the extreme fire danger, really people need to not be camping because that leads to campfires, all of those issues. So it's in Wasatch County. This is something that Park City and Wasatch County is working on in terms of enforcement. And, you know, if you're caught with a campfire, it's $1,000 fine. You can be responsible for any damage that's caused. And again, we're working on the enforcement. It is something that we knew would take several years to get under control. And that's something that we're working on right now with Wasatch County and Park City to have that enforcement take place.
Yeah. In terms of anything else being planned for the area, I mean, will we see more development of recreation areas there, or is that done?
I think pretty much we've nailed down what's going to happen there. There's one trail that right now is closed. Again, people keep ripping down the sign. That might become a permit-based trail so that you're really limiting the access to that particular area. And then the other issue that we really are hoping people can look at and respect is that there are certain areas that are closed until into July, and that is for calving issues and fledging issues with the species up there. And so people are limited from utilizing it then. So, you know, I think there's the final trail work that's taking place on one of those trails, but what people have to understand is that we're also doing some revegetation and restoration. Some of it is more passive by just trying to keep people off. Some of it we're putting in vertical incursions, reseeding, all of those sorts of things. But that's really what we're suffering from, is a lack of respect and a lack of regard.
Well, it sounds like we've got to step up that enforcement issue. And again, so that's something that the Park City and Wasatch County need to figure out?
That's an interlocal, interjurisdictional mm-hmm. issue. We've always known that that would be something that is important. And again, you know, we're seeing these sorts of issues all over the place where people just are disregarding, you know, areas where they need to keep their dogs on leash, you know, picking up even after themselves. There's a new term out there called Hansel and Gretling. And it's people literally, like, you know, throwing the breadcrumbs because they're just not aware of not just leave no trace, but let's leave it loved. Let's leave it better. Let's challenge our inner steward to be better stewards of the land.
So with the increased use, I mean, are we seeing increased conservation problems? I mean, more garbage? I mean, are we still protecting the watershed, which was really a big point of all of this?
Yeah, we are continuing to monitor water quality. We are actually, again, we haven't seen the kind of garbage that we saw the first year that we were pulling out those piles of trash. Utopian Lands has had a ranger out almost every weekend up on Bloods Lake trying to educate people. And that's the kind of thing that's amazing, is people just not being aware. We're also having issues with, you know, some of those online apps like All Trails and some of the others that incorrectly misidentify inaccurately what's taking place up there. In fact, one of the issues that's challenging with camping is they have a big camping sign on one of those online apps. So this last week we were working with a very hard to get a hold of support staff to say this is not a camping area, and even some pushback saying, well, it used to be camping. Well, that's just not appropriate. So we're having to go after these things on multiple fronts to educate people. And again, challenging your inner steward might mean talking to some of your friends and neighbors and even people on the trails just to help them understand. When your dog is off leash, especially in a mega drought with this kind of heat, the animals are really taxed, especially moose that have a hard time with thermoregulation. So if you're disturbing them, if you're getting them out of the water, all of those sorts of things by not having your dog on leash, it can create a lot of stress for those animals. So it isn't just, oh, we don't want to have your dog off leash and some arbitrary rule. It has a real benefit to the wildlife. And yeah, I know it's inconvenient. I have a dog, love her. Love to take her places off leash, but there are areas where it's just not appropriate because we have to enlarge our sense of community. That's really what we're calling for, because this, I don't think, is going away. All of these areas that we love, these open spaces, they're just more of a challenge because people are out there more often. And yes, Leslie, I think the main question that I keep kind of avoiding is, if it gets too bad, there will be trails that will be closed, and that's going to be upsetting for people. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. In terms of, though, the dogs can be off-leash in certain areas, or dogs on leash all the time?
Dogs on leash all the time.
All right. Let's speak a little bit about just the traffic issues. I mean, we've got the parking lots, but we still see issues of people just parking. It's like, I drove up here, I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
Is there a way to solve that problem?
That is, again, part of the enforcement, right? You need to be able to ticket people. Park City has had their parking enforcement people up there, but it's over in Wasatch County. So I've listened to some of the discussions and where things are going. Again, all of these resources are taxed for every jurisdiction, but I am really optimistic at listening to some of the good conversation and the partnership that needs to take place between some of these jurisdictions. And again, we're seeing it all over. The animals and a lot of the people don't know where the Park City line boundary ends and the Summit County line or the Wasatch County line or the Salt Lake County line begins. The Forest Service is having problems in Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon. This is something that if we want to really respect the other resources and not deplete them, we all have to be better stewards.
Okay. Wendy, what else are you guys working on?
Well, we are really happy to be getting close to the final closing of the Albert Kohler Legacy Farm in the Midway area. I don't think I've ever been through so many federal reviews on a project, but this one has gone to the DC level, and we are finally through those reviews. So we are looking forward to finalizing the close on that. Some tremendous support from, of course, Wasatch County and that open space bond, Midway City and that open space bond, the state open space fund, the Lee Ray McAllister Fund. We got funding from the AHECI Trust. We got some individual donations that came into that. We, of course, got a grant from the George S. and Dolores Dore Eccles Foundation to see that conservation easement put in place. And when you think about the value of that property for the entry corridor to the Midway area and some of the things we love, like, of course, our local, the Heber Valley artisan cheese, that's all coming from that dairy. I could go on about their robotic dairy and the Fitbits that are on the cows. It's just really a great family, fifth generation, and we're looking forward to the final close on that now that we've crossed all of those hurdles multiple times.
Yeah, what's the acreage on that?
102 acres.
Oh. Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, we're looking forward to some announcements of some other conservation properties here in the near future. And again, we would really challenge everybody with their inner steward to be a better steward out there. It's really needed for all of these open spaces we love.
All right. Wendy Fisher is the Executive Director of Utah Open Lands. Thanks for coming by. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Again, Looking for a good chance of some showers and thunderstorms before noon. Looking for an expected high of about 74. Probably a better chance of an afternoon shower with an 80% chance. Looking for an overnight low of 55. And that's pretty much it for the rest of the week. Looks like we're going to dry out and warm up with temperatures back into the mid-80s by Thursday. Currently in the Heber Valley, we have got, we've got 61 degrees. A light drizzle is reported there, looking for a high today of 84 with, again, a 40 to 80% chance of some rain today, decreasing by tonight with an overnight low of 50. And again, drier and warmer through the rest of the week. 87 is the forecast for Tuesday, back into the 90s for Wednesday and Thursday. Taking a look at some local news, a federal appeals court has dealt a setback to a Utah death row inmate who saw his conviction overturned with a string of violence at a remote cabin located in Summit County. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled Friday that even if Von Wester Taylor did not fire the fatal shots in a 1990 triple shooting and kidnapping case, he cannot be considered innocent because Utah law makes accomplices as guilty as perpetrators. Last March, a federal judge overturned the death sentence given to Taylor after he was convicted for murders that occurred some 30 years ago. That case began just after Christmas in 1990. Taylor and a friend, Edward Stephen Deli, had escaped from a halfway house and broke into a family cabin owned by Rolf and Kay Tita up Weber Canyon. When the family returned, prosecutors alleged that Taylor fatally shot 70-year-old Beth Potts and her daughter, 49-year-old Kay, and kidnapped the Tita's two daughters. The two suspects were captured by officers following a vehicle chase. The finding overturns a previous ruling by a federal judge in Salt Lake City who found reason to believe that Taylor's partner had committed the murders. Stephen Deli was found guilty in a separate trial of second-degree murder. He is currently serving a life sentence. Over the years, Taylor has pursued a number of unsuccessful appeals to state courts, including three efforts before the Utah Supreme Court. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. And joining me now in the studio is the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City, Rob Harder. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
Let's start off first with just the news of the Camas Food Bank closing. They expect to reopen maybe after the first of the year. They've got some temporary plans with a mobile food truck in the meantime, which should be coming online here maybe next month. Maybe we can just talk a little bit about food banks. Christian Center has its own food bank?
That's correct, exactly. So we've got our own food bank here in Park City and in Heber. Now, we end up serving Greater Summit County, so we do have people from Camas and Colville, Oakley, they all come. We've got our own food bank here in Park City and in Heber. Now, we end up serving Greater Summit County, so we do have people from Camas and Colville, Oakley, they all come. So the nice thing is we're able to serve the entire county of Summit County as well as Wasatch County.
All right, so you can help anyone.
That's right. In the meantime, we've encouraged people to come on over to the Christian Center because we can help you. We have done mobile food pantries, too. Now, that's mostly in the Park City area, but it's in Heber as well. But we're open to that. In fact, we're having communication with Community Action. They've been a great partner, and so we're trying to talk through what makes the most sense to make sure that we're serving everybody in that Camas-Colville area.
Okay, and that's what I guess maybe you can explain a little bit better. I mean, so Christian Center runs and operates its own food bank, and yet we've got Community Action Services, what, a statewide agency that... It opens up food banks in other communities?
Exactly. It's kind of an interesting thing. They started way back in the 1960s, and there's several throughout the state and actually across the country. They are nonprofits, 501c3s, just like ours, but they started a long time ago, and so they've had historically various food pantries. Like in Heber, they had one. They're actually in the process of closing that one down as well. And then Camas, I think partly as we've just grown and grown and grown, and I think they're realizing, hey, let's just make sure people have food that need it, but if we're duplicating services, maybe we can, you know, work together and combine resources as opposed to having a couple of different options and kind of splitting our resources, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing there's some kind of regulations for operating a food bank. I mean, is it is it more difficult than you'd think, or?
Well, you know what's interesting? It's as we talk all the time, we lose money on our food pantry, right? Because we're just giving money away. It's not like we're gaining money. Now we get lots of wonderful grants, which helps a lot. So I think in that sense, it's something where you need to have a broader, you know, nonprofit that supports all these different services, so you can, you know, provide the resources for a food pantry. But the good news is, like, Utah Food Bank is kind of the state agency, if you will, that gathers most of the food. They're connected with Feeding America, which is a national organization, and so we're an affiliate, if you will, of Utah Food Bank here in Summit and in Wasatch County. And Community Action kind of actually preceded Utah Food Bank, is what I understand, but we all kind of work together. Essentially, we're like, what are the needs? Where are the gaps in food security issues? And let's try to work together to meet those needs.
All right. And then your mobile food pantry, is that what, a big van, a truck?
Yeah, we use a couple of our trucks, yes. And we've got some wonderful trucks, thanks to wonderful support. And so we typically, up to this point, Leslie, we've gone to apartment complexes, places where we know, just based on communication with our clients, where they live. And we've worked with the apartment managers. And it kind of started during COVID, right, when we wanted to bring food to people so that they didn't have to come here for safety reasons. And it just continued. And a lot of people, it actually was helpful to bring it right to their residents. And then we did a lot with the vaccination effort. We did a lot of information on mountain mediation, provided some information about housing and rent, the rights that you have, and just different things like that, getting information out in combination with getting food out. And so that's been really successful. Our clients have really liked that. And so we provided that both in Wasatch and in Summit County, really the last 9 months now.
Yeah. And you also get out to seniors, or is that a different program through Meals on Wheels?
Yeah. Exactly. That's another program. Yeah, we work with them really closely. So the wonderful thing is that every day there's a couple of different groups that come and get food and then distribute them to seniors. And so we work with Meals on Wheels. We work with the county. So that actually is working really well. And same with Wasatch County. There's just been a great partnership of we tend to get a ton of food. And so we just want to get this food out to as many people as possible. So if we have people, volunteers from these different organizations can come and pick up the food, or at times, like we've mentioned before, we'll drop off food or provide mobile food pantries. But either way, we just happen to get so much food, we want to make sure it gets to people. And yes, we're able to get it to seniors too.
All right. There shouldn't be any hungry people in the county, right?
Exactly.
I mean, they just need to call.
That's exactly right. There is so much food. That's one thing we have not run out of, luckily, up to this point. So there's plenty of food. You're absolutely right.
All right. Let's talk a little about moratorium evictions. We had spoken with Gretchen Lee from the Mountain Mediation Center. She mentioned that she was working with the Christian Center. What are you guys seeing? Are you seeing requests for help with possible eviction?
We have. And Gretchen, by the way, is doing a great job. We love working with her and her organization. She's provided so much great legal help, as you've had on your show. You heard all the wonderful information. So yes, we have. What we've heard is we've had a lot of people that are being pushed to be evicted. But the biggest thing we're seeing right now, Leslie, is not so much a push to be evicted, but just raising their rent. And so that's the biggest issue right now, is that they're like, well, you can continue to, you know, rent here, and they have these month-to-month agreements, but we're just going to raise it by 10, 15, 20%. And under current Utah law, they can do that as long as they give them notice. So that's what we're bumping into, is that they're not being evicted, but the price is going up to the point where they can't afford it. And so that's where they're coming to us to say, hey, we need to help with that gap between what we could pay and what now they're asking us to pay. Could you help us with that gap? And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. And as a result, I mean, are we seeing then, we've often heard of more than one family living in a unit. Then does that mean that now those units are becoming more crowded?
That has been a problem for a long time, sadly, and I think COVID really exposed that for everybody. So that continues to be an issue, Leslie. Yeah, absolutely. So that's something we're working on to try to, you know, get more people into more housing. The tough thing is, you have had multiple conversations on the show, you know, over the years, affordable housing just continues to be a real problem. So the tough thing is, where do they go? You know, if we split them up and try to get more affordable housing, there's just a real shortage of affordable housing in Summit County and Wasatch County, for that matter.
Yeah. And then in terms of, Gretchen mentioned, I mean, billions of dollars available for federal dollars available for possible eviction. So does that money, can it be used then to add to that increased rent?
So that's where it gets a little tricky.
It's not an eviction, right?
Exactly. That's the challenge right now, honestly, is yes, there's money available. So that's a good thing. If you're listening today, both for a landlord as well as for those who maybe have an eviction notice, there is money. The federal government has given it to the state, and the state has passed it on. So there is money both for the landlord and for the client. The tough thing is, yes, if it's not clearly an eviction notice, that's where it gets a little sticky legally. And so that's where we've, right now, along with JFS, Jewish Family Services, we filled that gap to say, well, we'll help with those rent increases. And if we can get everybody else with the eviction notices to get some of this federal money, then we can hopefully keep everybody in their place and make sure no one is homeless.
Okay. And again, just like if you're hungry, if you're facing eviction, call the Christian Center. At least you can get them in the right direction.
Exactly. Absolutely. We're willing to help you. And if now, if we can't help you, then we'll definitely point you in the right direction.
Okay. Got a couple of events happening. The back to school basis. Is that happening here or has it happened?
It is. It's coming up. Next week, actually, it happens in Heber. And we already have over 500 kids signed up. It's been so fun to see. That's the largest number we've ever had in Heber in Wasatch County. So we encourage you, if you're listening from Wasatch County and Heber, which I know you have a growing listening audience there, we still need some volunteers and we're always looking for help. And then the Park City Summit County back to school basics will happen in 2 weeks. And we'll be at the Outlets Park City. We're looking for about 800 to 900 kids that will be signed up for this program. That's about the number of kids that qualify for free and reduced lunch. So we're working closely with the school district on that. And yeah, we're super excited about that. So we encourage you to check out our website, ccfpc.org. We'd love to have volunteers come and actually go to the event itself. We're also asking to sponsor a child, $100 per child, because our goal is we give $100 per child to go shopping at the outlets, and that helps them get shoes that fit and jeans that don't have holes in them. And it's just a wonderful event to help get kids started on the right foot before the school year.
All right. And you're also bringing back this year your Hike for Hunger fundraiser.
We are. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, we're so excited about that. Now, the only big change, but it is a big change, the last 10 years we've been at Snowpark, and they were not able to accommodate us this year, so we're going to St. Regis, which we're super excited. St. Regis has been great to work with. Now, there's a limitation, though. We can only have about 200 people at the St. Regis, and typically we've had up to 600 or 700 people at the Hike for Hunger, so it's going to be much smaller. So we encourage people, sign up today. You can actually go to our website, check in, sign in, because I think we are going to sell this out. But it's a great event. St. Regis will be wonderful. It's September 19th, starting at 2 p.m. And again, you can go to our website and get your name locked in, and it should be a fun event.
Okay. Rob, anything else you wanted to mention?
That should do it. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
All right. Rob Harder is the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City. KPCW News Time now, 8:59. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, again, UDOT had announced that they will be reducing westbound Interstate 80 to 2 lanes between US 40 and Kimball Junction today, starting at 8. That should run through Wednesday, August 5th at 8 p.m. The closure is to pave the highway as well as conduct some bridge maintenance work. UDOT shifted the work to weekdays instead of the weekend and will open up an additional lane of traffic to hopefully prevent the backlog of traffic that we saw a couple of weeks ago when the highway was closed. Minor delays still are expected. Drivers should plan ahead, allow some extra travel time, and reduce your speed limit as speed limits are being reduced to 55. Again, the paving happening just west of Kimball Junction to the US 40 Silver Creek Junction, along with the Silver Creek I-80 ramps at the Silver Summit Interchange. For the latest on traffic restrictions during construction, you can visit the UDOT traffic website. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for headline news, followed up with Mountain Money. It's 9 o'clock.